When Ajahn Lee started teaching in Bangkok, he had to fight against a belief that was prevalent at that time. And it was propagated by senior monks in Bangkok, which was that jhana was no longer available, nibbana was no longer available. As part of a government policy to get monks to be teachers. If they couldn't practice for nibbana or jhana anymore, they might as well do it their duty for society. Which is why all the books that Ajahn Lee wrote when he was in Bangkok, all those he updated, have sections on jhana. To assert that yes, the way to jhana is open, the way to nibbana is still open. That was the basic message of the forest tradition. By the time Ajahn Phuong was teaching in Bangkok, and Ajahn Lee's point had been widely accepted. So when Ajahn Phuong taught, he didn't place that much emphasis on jhana. He very rarely used the word. But he handed out instructions for breath meditation. He handed out Ajahn Lee's method too. And even though the descriptions of jhana occur at the end of method two, he pointed people to the seven steps in the beginning. Except for the topic of your meditation is not jhana. The topic of your meditation is the breath. That's where your focus should be. When people would ask him about what level they were on in their practice, he would turn the question back to them. Well, how is your breath right now? What does the breath feel like? How is your awareness of the breath? How do they relate? And then based on what the people said, he would point them to different ways of breathing, different ways of relating to the breath. Keep the focus where it belonged. As you'll notice, at the end of the Noble Path, there's a description of right mindfulness and the description of right concentration. The description of right mindfulness is actually the instructions of how you get into right concentration. They don't mention jhana at all. They talk about where you're focused, how you're focused, what qualities of mind you bring to the focus. Now you put aside greed and distress with reference to the world. The qualities of mind, of course, are mindfulness itself, the ability to keep something in mind. In this case, you're keeping your topic in mind, which is the breath. And then you're alert. You're alert to see how the breath is going, and you're also alert to see what your mind is doing, how they're fitting together. And finally, you're ardent. You're trying to do this well. You're not just sitting there waiting for jhana to swoop out of the sky and hit you in the head. You're not just lulling yourself off to a dreamy state. You're trying to strengthen your mindfulness, strengthen your alertness, strengthen your ability to stay with the breath, to be snug with the breath. Then as the Buddha further explains in his descriptions for mindfulness of breathing, you try to breathe in a way that's sensitive to rapture, sensitive to pleasure, or you may say sensitive to refreshment, sensitive to ease. You're paying careful attention to what you're experiencing directly, not worrying about what labels you're going to put on it. Because one of the things I noticed about the way Ajahn Phuong taught was like he was herding cats at the very beginning. People whose minds were heading off and too far left, he'd tell them to go right. Those who are heading too far right, he'd tell them to go left. They're getting ahead of themselves, he'd tell them to come back. And people would go through different stages, the way they would describe their breath, the way they would describe the mind's relationship to the breath would change from person to person. Till they all got to the point where the breath stopped. Awareness was filling the body. There was no felt need to breathe in, to breathe out. Everything was very, very still. And from that point on, everybody's practice seemed to follow the same steps. So the hard part is there in the beginning. How you get the mind to settle down like that in a way where you're not suppressing the breath or forcing it too much. Or trying to clone what you've read. This fits in with the canon, where they have the standard description for the stages of concentration getting to the fourth jhana as four stages. But there are also descriptions that have five stages, others that have three. The ones that have three tend to be people who tend to be more visual in their experience of concentration. But it makes the point that your progression through your stages of concentration is going to be your progression. The best way to deal with it is to have post-it notes handy. When you get into a stage of concentration and it feels good, when you pull out, try to notice, how did it feel? Where were you focused? How was the breath? What was your relationship to the breath? Take note of that. That might be your first jhana. May not be the Buddha's, but it's yours. And then as you practice along, you'll find the mind slips into other stages. And as long as you're alert to what you're doing, you have the qualities of mindfulness, alertness, and ardency, you're on the right track. Then when you finally get to the point where the breath stops, your awareness fills the body, a calm breath energy fills the body, you feel no need to breathe, then you can go back and review your various post-it notes and throw some of them away, as you get a sense of what the real landmarks are in the way your mind settles down. Because after all, this is your mind. You want to know it well. It is your breath. You want to know it well. And you want to be very clear about how you observe what's going on in the present moment. Because what you want to see is, what are you doing in the present moment? That's the whole purpose of all this. It's not to check off the jhana box. It's to get you very, very sensitive to what you are doing shaping the present moment. Because that's the important insight you're going to have, how you're fabricating things. This is one of the reasons why the Buddha, when he describes the steps in breath meditation, we'll talk about bodily fabrication and mental fabrication, even though he could use less technical terms. But he wants to get you sensitive to the fact that you are shaping things right now. And there's going to be a pattern in how you calm down the shaping, get to see the main outlines, the main factors that are really important. One, the way you breathe. Two, the way you talk to yourself, your direct thought and evaluation. And then three, your perceptions and your feelings. Those are the basic principles that you want to see. Those are the things you're doing right now, your present moment karma. So you want to get sensitive to that. It helps to clear away one of the big misunderstandings that somehow the path does itself, or that you're not doing the path. When people gain a sense of a basic stage of consciousness that underlies everything, a kind of ground of being, you can build all kinds of wrong views around that. But when you realize that that state of consciousness is something that you fabricated, that saves you from falling for those wrong views. The question always is, what am I doing? What am I doing? Even in the state where the mind is very still, breath is still, there's still some fabrication going on. There's still some intentions going on. Even as you get into the formless states, as you get to know them better, you see there's a certain amount of fabrication going on. And seeing that is important. It helps to prevent wrong view. Keeps you on track. So the important thing is how sensitive you are to what you're doing. And as for the maps, you're going to create your own map. But it is good to reserve judgment. That's why I say use post-it notes as you're going along. Because sometimes you can overestimate things or underestimate things. There are stories of the four sajans underestimating sometimes their attainments because they didn't fit into what they had read in the texts. Doing a careful review that they realized that they had reached a state that they hadn't realized what it was before. I'm reminded of that trip I took one time to Utah. We're going to go to Powell Plateau, from which the guidebook said you could see a large section of southern Utah. It named all the different mountain ranges and all the different special formations that you could see from up there. Well, we got up on the road, and we took a wrong turn. We got to what we thought was Powell Plateau. So we pulled out the guidebook and looked out across what we could see. And we said, well, that must be this mountain range, and that must be this mountain range. This must be that rock formation. But there was one thing that was visible that was not listed in the guidebook, which is this large plateau off to the east. After a while, we realized, well, that was Powell Plateau. We're not at the end of Powell Plateau. So the next day, we drove up to Powell Plateau. We realized that we had misidentified a lot of the mountain ranges. Because we're coming for ignorance. It's the same when you're exploring your mind into concentration or exploring how your mind goes into concentration. You're coming from ignorance. So it's good to limit your labels to post-it notes that they can be moved around. So that your map is clearer, more in line with the Buddha's map. But you still may find you have several stages you go through that are more than four or less than four. That's just the nature of your mind. And you can be confident in that only when you have been really observant about how the mind settles down, how you experience the breath, how you talk to yourself. The stage where you're engaging in directed thought and evaluation and then falls back into the background. About how things go after that. This is your mind. This is your breath. So the opportunity here is to get to know it well. The maps and the texts are there to give some suggestions. But the important thing is you learn how to observe what you're doing right here, right now. How you're relating to things right here, right now. Because when you do that in ignorance, you're going to suffer. When you do it with knowledge, comes a path to the end of suffering. This is where the real work is done, not in the texts, not in the words, but in your sensitivity to what you're doing right now.